Yes. Brian Eno's Fractal Zoom, always a nice way to start off ZenTech. My name is Mikhail Graham, and I'll be your host with a special version of ZenTech, a little different than the usual ZenTechs. Today, we're going to be focusing on the world of digital audio and plugins and a recent interview that I did with some friends in Israel by the name of Waves, an interesting company that's been around for nearly 20 years. And this is a fascinating subject. I hope you enjoy the show. So rather than go on and talk a lot about what it's going to be, why don't I let you just hear the show in its entirety, along with the interview, some audio examples, and more, as we dive into the world of digital audio 101 of what you can do with your laptop or desktop computer. These days, it's quite amazing, truly a studio in a box. We'll be right back with the interview in just a moment. Picture this, 24 audio recording and editing programs, each of them a world-class application, all offering the latest killer features, and all of them vying for your hard-earned dollars, and none of them compatible with one another in any way, shape, or form. Sound like digital purgatory? The fact is, closed systems like this were the unwritten law of the land until the late 1980s, when a new technology came along called audio plugins. Pioneering companies like Waves, who we'll be discussing later in the show, were at the forefront of creating this new technology. So what makes it a plugin? Well, most programs today have lots of fun and useful editing tools, but do cool features alone make these menu options a plugin? Well, maybe, maybe not. If a particular program allows for adding new features without having to update to a new version or replace the core operating system, then it supports at least a form of the plugin paradigm. Well, let's see. A good analogy is the system extensions and control panels that you'll find in Mac and Windows software operating systems. By simply dropping a new piece of code into the right folder, you can have brand new features without having to replace the entire operating system of your computer. Likewise, for audio plugins, just install a peripheral piece of software, a plugin, that can be accessed from within your current audio program, and practically anything can be done. For example, need a compressor to fatten up that rhythm track? Or how about an analog tape or vacuum tube emulation to warm up the digital audio that you've got going? How about a little touch of reverb with some chorus? Maybe that'd be nice. Or let's create a Technotrosity that reduces your beautiful 24-bit recording to 2 bits, and then add some noise and then distort the mix so that even your mother wouldn't know that that was you wailing away in the background on that 9-inch nails-like vocal. You get the idea. By itself, an audio plugin is just a piece of software that tells a chip in your computer or sound card what to do. A plugin also requires a master program or host to actually plug into. That way you can run your digital audio through it. There's all kinds of programs out there. On the Macintosh, you've got programs like Digital Performer, Pro Tools, Logic, GarageBand, BiasPeak, and a host of others. On the PC area, you've got programs like Nuendo, Cubase, you've got Sonar, all kinds of different programs that are out there live from Ableton. All of these offer a form of plugins. Some of them are built right into it directly through their own operating system. Some of them you can actually add third-party plugins to it. Now, entering the world of audio plugins is like being a kid in a candy store, because with each new algorithm offering a taste of sound like none before it, you'll have all that cool stuff I mentioned, like reverb, chorus, flanging, EQ, compression, you know, pitch shifting, stereo imaging, granular synthesis, ring modulation, and so much more. Now, many of these audio effects, they used to require thousands of dollars of equipment and extra studio space, and added a lot of heat as well as noise to your mix. But today, well, many of these formerly hardware-only effects can be found in the noise-free world of software. And the cost of an audio plugin can range from shareware prices to over $1,000 or more for some of the high-end processors, not including, of course, the host program, which is something you have to consider as well. Well, since plugins tend to be focused on specific applications, there are many times, though not always, where a relatively simple learning curve is right there in place. They also, generally speaking, take up little disk space, making them ideal for distribution over the internet, where you can download them. In fact, many of the plugin developers out there offer tutorials, demo versions, extra presets, and all kinds of updates, and you can just download right from the web. And of course, there's formats as well. Well, we're going to get into all of this and more. We're going to be interviewing today Shahar Gilad from Waves over in Israel. Waves is a company that pioneered the concept of digital audio processing via plugins, starting out with DigiDesign's Sound Designer program, and then migrating into the world of Pro Tools plugins such as Audio Suite, RTAS, TDM. Waves now today supports pretty much everything that's out there that I know of. Quite a company, quite a story. So let's get started with my recent interview with Waves product marketing manager, Shahar Gilad. Shahar, how long have you been with Waves?
I've been with Waves for just about 3 years now.
3 years. And what were you doing before you started working with them?
Well, before that, I was working at Apple on Logic. And before that, I was producing and mixing in New York for quite a few years. So it was a natural place for me to be at Waves. I had some background in software as well, so... Uh-huh. All those things together kind of led me to Waves.
You're a musician besides being a marketing manager.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Think most of the people in our industry are.
It is a small industry full of a lot of creative people, definitely.
Yeah.
So working with Logic, that's your digital audio workstation of choice?
I use both Logic and Pro Tools, actually.
So before you got into working for Waves, were you using their plugins?
Yeah, I was freelancing at a lot of recording studios in New York for about 6 years. Many of those studios had Waves, so I was using Waves plugins before I was working there, long before I was working there.
The history of Waves, as I've mentioned earlier in the show, goes back to late 80s, early 90s, when Mayer and Gilad actually put the company together. And they have some pretty strong principles behind the concept, but I thought being their marketing manager, maybe you could give our listeners an idea of what their philosophy is, because this is really one of the largest audio software plug-in companies on the planet, and there's just such a wide array. I think more than 100 different plug-in processors that Waves makes. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think at this point we're getting on about 150.
Wow, 150. And that all started back in the days of the Q10 and L1 for a little program called Sound Designer for DigiDesign. Amazing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Early 90s, I think, 1992 is when Mayer and Gilad actually founded the company formally, and the Q10 being the first plugin. And both of them had a musical background, sound, as well as engineering. I think what they wanted to do was utilize the fact that computers were becoming more and more prevalent in studios and the fact that Pro Tools was out there and was potentially to become a standard to allow digital signal processing inside a computer. So up until that point, people were mixing using hardware gear, using consoles, and Mayer and Gilad's opportunity that they recognized was to do that sound processing within the box. Since then, 20 years later, that's exactly how people are working these days. That's become the standard way to mix music.
Yeah, it seems to be everybody's using it one way or another. Even if they're still using hardware, they do some of their mixing within the computer and then take it out to hardware on tape or whatever it might be. Talking about Waves, there's a general vibe about the company that's always brought a feeling of real professionalism to me. Where does that come from?
Well, I think it comes from the top down, like most companies. Mayer and Gilad are the founders of the company and the co-owners of the company, and they still run the company. And so they still treat it sort of like a small company, even though it's not that small anymore, with a very strong emphasis on integrity. I mean, it's really, really important to Mayer and Gilad that when we're modeling something, that we don't quit or we don't release it until everybody feels that it's really excellent and that it's really true to the original. So there have been projects that have, just stayed in-house for a very long time because they didn't feel they were ready to see the light of day. So I think the concept of being, those notions of being very creative on one hand and trying to create innovative tools. Like recently we released the Vocal Writer, which is, a tool that's unique, that helps solve a problem for people. And then at the same time, the artist signature stuff and the modeling, but at the same time, the integrity to high fidelity sound, to tools that are for professionals, whoever they're used by, they can and are used by professionals as well. And I think that's what's really important for them.
So what was such a breakthrough? I mean, we talk about in the world of audio plugins, there's milestone breakthroughs, and a couple of those were the Q10 and the L1, but can you explain to the listeners a little bit more about these breakthroughs? What's so unique about an equalizer like the Q10 or dithering and maximizing like the L1, that sort of thing?
Sure, absolutely. Basically, up until Pro Tools was the platform, people used to record music to tape. And after you record sound, you typically process that sound. That's called a mixing process. And back in the day, people used to mix using hardware gear. And for those not familiar with what mixing is, just imagine playing with the EQ and the treble on your home stereo system or in the car. So that's the most basic way to manipulate a sound. And when you have several audio sources recorded, then you want to balance them out in terms of levels. But then you also want to make each one sound better and give it its own space and its own place and give the sound a creative angle. So that was done recording to tape and then using hardware gear to mix. When the Q10 came around, it was the first time that there was a software that allowed you to equalize a sound. And it sounded as good as hardware that was out there at the time. You had 10 bands, which allowed plenty of flexibility. You know, up until that point, you couldn't do that with software. You could only do that with hardware. So imagine all the advantages that you have in software and in every other realm. For example, using a typewriter to write a document versus a Word document. You know, you can recall the document at any point. It stays the same. You can undo things. All those advantages suddenly existed when you're processing audio. So that was a pretty big breakthrough. The L1 was a level maximizer, and what that means is that once a song is mixed and it's down to two tracks, you want to master it. Mastering does several things, but the most important, it brings it up to a level that's competitive with other songs out there and sounds like it belongs on the same record as other songs that are mastered along with it. The L1, again, allowed to do that in the digital domain. It was a peak limiter that allowed the sound, the stereo two-track that was already mixed, to sound as loud as it could and still friendly to all the playback mechanisms. The difference between normalizing and using a peak limiter is that when you use a peak limiter, you raise the RMS. You raise the perceived volume of the sound, because what you can do is you can round off or chop off peaks of the sound. Imagine a waveform. We've all seen waveforms of sound. When you're normalizing, you're bringing the highest peak to basically zero. So in other words, that's as loud as it can get. But everything that was low or soft in between those peaks can only be as loud as it can if it stays in the same ratio to those peaks. When you use a limiter, you can take those valleys and raise them up as well. So the sound changes slightly, but everything seems louder, including those soft parts. So the perceived level of the song is much louder than before.
So, Shahar, for the listeners out there, we've got all these different plugins for doing modulation effects like flanging and chorus. We've got reverbs, we've got room simulators, compressors, EQs. Some of these are pretty obvious. An equalizer just changes the various frequencies. A compressor kind of makes things quieter or louder, depending. A limiter will keep it from going too loud. But maybe explain a little bit to the listeners out there that don't know really what we're talking about, how some of this works.
Let's go back to the way music used to be recorded. Music used to be recorded onto tape, and then the different elements on through different microphones. So let's say you have a vocal on one microphone, and then you have a microphone over the drum kit, and you have a microphone in front of your bass amp. They have several tracks, right? The Beatles used a 4-track initially, and then, you know, nowadays it's much more than that. And then a mixing engineer would come in and do something that's a very important part of the process, is mixing. And what a mixing engineer would do, he'd balance the different elements together, but give each one their character. So you would do that with hardware gear. So you'd have, like you mentioned, a compressor, an equalizer, you know, to make them brighter or darker and give them a space. We'd also have things, like you said, creative, flanger, for example, or a reverb or a delay. A delay is when you add an echo to a sound. So like, hello, low, 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 right? That's something that people are used to hearing in pop music, but many of them don't realize that that's just a part of the mixing process and a creative element that the mixing engineer took on himself to add. Well, plugins are, think of like filters for Adobe Photoshop. It's adding all those different elements, the equalizers, the compressors, the delays, the reverbs, making an element sound like it was recorded in a much bigger room than it was actually recorded in a cathedral. The Waves plugins, that's what they do. They allow mixing engineers to do all this creative work on different sound elements, but right inside a computer.
Hmm. The company's branched off into so many variations. There's a Renaissance EQ. There's the audio track plugin that kind of combines a channel strip. Then the L1, the L2, the L3, the L316, and so forth and so on. Is there really a need for this many different variations, or are they just the same thing with just, you know, one's green and one's blue?
No, that's a very good question. The reason for that is that each one of them impart a different color and a different character. You know, if you're just on a utilitarian tool, and when you're working on an audio file and you just want to EQ it and compress it, you know, do the real basic tasks to it, you may be able to get away with, you know, the Q10 and the C1, which is the first compressor. But since the early days of mixing, people were looking for creative ways to mix, a different type of delay, a different color for an EQ. Certain audio engineers preferred an EVQ, and then an SSL came around, people preferred the SSL, and et cetera, et cetera. So when you have different plugins, each one has a different color to it. Now, one difference between the different plugins is sound, right? The Renaissance EQ has a different sound than the Q10. But there are other differences as well, and that's the way they're designed functionally. So when we put out, for example, the first Artist Signature plugin, we worked with Tony Maserati, a well-known mixing engineer, to capture his approach to mixing particular elements and wrap all the different processing that he does to an element, let's say a vocal, for example, into one plugin. So then it became Tony Maserati's vocal plugin. So behind the scenes, there are all these different processors and all these different EQ curves that Tony likes to use on a vocal, and then, you know, a couple of different delay times that he typically uses on a vocal. And then we wrap that up into one plugin, and the user just puts that on a vocal, and he has it all there with just enough tweakability that Tony would want him to have. So that's clearly different than having a Q10 that you would bring up and then start EQing from scratch. It's the color, it's the character, and it's also the functionality that we can do in the digital domain that allows us to make all these creative different plugins.
So for many years, Waves just worked in-house, so to speak. And then it started to change a few years ago, where I started noticing, like you just dropped a few names, like Tony Maserati, who's worked with Tupac Shakur and other artists like that, and Chris Lord-Alge, or one of the godfathers of it all, Eddie Kramer, who worked with Zeppelin and Jimi Hendrix, folks like that. You know, other than the publicity and marketing side of it, which of course anybody can get, even if you're not into using these kind of tools, what brought that about, and how did you convince these kinds of artists to get involved with Waves?
That's a very good question. I've been asked that before. I mean, here's what happened. I mean, look at Chris Lord-Alge, you know, one of the earlier artists that we started working with. Chris is one of the top mixing engineers in the world. At almost any given moment, you can hear a couple of his songs on top 40 hits. He has a very distinct sound. And Chris was an avid SSL console user. That's the way he worked. When we modeled the SSL console, Chris heard it and he was blown away. He said that it was the first time that he heard plugins that he really liked, that he felt he could use, that were true to the original. And at that point, he volunteered to make presets for us. So like the Chris Lord-Alge snare preset for the SSL channel strip. Mm. We then realized after we released those that people were loving them. Imagine all these young engineers getting a chance to peek over Chris Lord-Alge's shoulder and to see how he processes certain elements. You know, I mean, I remember when I was a young engineer, you know, I would have killed for that kind of opportunity. To see, you know, how did he get that bass sound? How did he get that kick drum sound? And I think that's what those presets did. So that was kind of one of the early things that happened, is we did these presets. So we started working with them first, you know, making presets. Then we said, hey, we're modeling this hardware gear. Why not work with them as referees throughout that process? So, you know, we worked on the CL92A. We worked with Chris. We picked out pieces of gear from his collection. We actually asked him, what are your pieces of gear that you go to all the time? And so those were the ones we decided to model. And then as we worked, we kept going back and forth with him, just like with Jack Puig. And when we did the Puig Child, we used one of his Fairchild units, and we sent files to him, and we were with him in the studio. So using him as referees was always a good compass for us. We've been going on tours with artists lately, and they do these events where they tell young engineers how they work, and they show them things. And of course, it's good for us. You know, it's publicity, but it also brings the knowledge that these guys have to our customers. So it's a really deep relationship at this point that we're excited about.
A lot of the folks out there that are listening to this, some of them are seasoned pros, some of them are just getting started, and some don't have a clue what we're talking about. So let's back up a little bit. Modeling. Sure. We hear that term used for a lot of different things, be it, you know, a fancy magazine cover. You see this in Avatar movies where things have been modeled and then suddenly you've got a skin applied to something. Can you explain to the listeners a little bit about how this modeling process works? Because looking at the Waves website, you would look at these plugins and go, well, there's Eddie Kramer's name on a vocal channel or a bass channel, or, you know, there's Chris Lord-Alge's effects. And you've modeled the kind of algorithms, the things that he does, the special secret sauce that these guys do. But what does that mean? How does that happen in sort of layman's terms?
That's a good question, because modeling, you know, like you said, happens in so many realms today. As the world is moving to digital, everything is being represented in zeros and ones more and more, from pictures to video to sound to things that used to be hardware, physical things we can touch, and they're now represented in one way or another in zeros and ones, right, which is what the digital domain is. Modeling for us started when we modeled SSL, which I mentioned earlier. we said, okay, you know, we've reached a point where we've made all these creative plugins using our digital signal processing. We've done everything that we think is cool up to that point, of course, and was true for that moment. But now, one thing that we felt was missing, or that we heard people tell us it was missing, is they missed particular pieces of hardware gear that they were used to using. So that was the professionals, right, that used to use that gear. At the same time, we kind of had an inclination to think maybe also the listeners kind of miss that sound that they're used to hearing because those professionals used to use those particular pieces of hardware gear. So why don't we take our know-how and model those pieces of hardware gear? So if you take an SSL EQ, we decided we're going to model every nuance of it, you know, from the way it looks, which is the skin and the GUI for the people using it, but also the way it sounds, exactly. So the filter curves, the harmonic distortion, even the noise and the hum that the console imparts, we wanted to capture that so that, again, the professionals who are used to using it would feel really comfortable moving over to the digital domain, and we could take down, you know, the last of the barriers of people who were kind of still glued to the consoles or the hardware gear. But also so our listeners will really feel like they're at home and they're hearing the same sound that they were used to hearing by music that was produced now in the digital domain. So that's modeling. You know, we're taking a snapshot of a piece of hardware and translating that into zeros and ones for tools that people can use. Now, the other flip side of that is what you mentioned is the artist signature stuff. The artist signature is when we work with these mixing engineers and producers to capture their whole chain. So it's no longer just that we're modeling a particular piece of hardware gear, but rather we go in the studio with Jeff Puig and we'd say, okay, show us how you work. Show us how you mix, you know, bass drum. He says, well, first I'll EQ it like this and then, you know, compress it like that. And we say, okay, let's try that on another session. And slowly together we realize that he has this starting point. He has these sort of, you know, a range of things that he does. And then we say, okay, how can we capture that inside one plugin? So that's the difference between the artist signature that we work with artists on and modeling.
Well, why don't we take a listen to a few of these now? We'll just play some various demos that I've put together for the listeners as well. This first demo features a track from an album I did with Paul Kamm and Eleanor McDonald. It's actually just a dry vocal track of Eleanor singing from a song called Salt in My Tears that many of you here on KVMR have probably heard at one time or another. You'll hear her voice dry first, and then we're going to use the Waves Chris Lord-Alge CLA FX plugin to create kind of a telephone version of her same vocal, and that's going to be followed with more of a spacious delay effect as well, all using the CLAFX Waves plugin to do this.
Our politicians promise there'll be jobs coming soon, and if you want to work for peanuts, you can have one by noon.
Our politicians promise there'll be jobs coming soon, and if you want to work for peanuts, you can have one by noon.
Our politicians promise there'll be jobs coming soon, and if you want to work for peanuts, you can have one by noon.
Next up, I'm going to use a track from the same song with Paul Kamm playing the rhythm guitar. You're going to hear his guitar dry for the first part, then you're going to hear it go through a series of different presets using Waves' Tony Maserati GTI plugin. And there's going to be vibrato, chorus, a Leslie effect, much more presence, and quite a few other odds and ends, but you'll just hear it change as it goes. I think you'll like it. Check this out. Next up, I'm going to try something a little different for you. I'm going to take a really nicely recorded drum kit, just a stereo track. It's a regular drum kit recorded in a nice room. Sounds pretty good just as it is. Then I'm going to run it through one of Waves plugins called the Metal Flanger. It's a great plugin for creating some classic flange sounds like Ichiku Park. You can do all kinds of different phasing tricks with it, and we'll hear two different presets there to do just those two various things. Then I'm going to run it through an L3 Ultra and just pump it up and make it really big and fat and loud. You'll be really surprised at the difference in what you hear. So stay tuned for this one. I think you'll like it as well. That's pretty amazing to me. I never get tired of hearing what that plugin can do. It's fat and big. Wow. All right, next up, I'm going to use another track here with Paul Kamm singing from another song on an album I worked on with him called Listen to Your Heart. You're going to hear part of one of the vocals that he's singing there, one of the verses, and I'm going to just let you hear it dry, and then we're going to run it through a Tony Maserati signature artist plugin from Waves that gives you a sense of how much bigger the vocal can become along with more presence. And then we'll follow that up with even more effects, all from this one plugin. It's kind of like a little studio in a box. Check this out.
If the messenger is angry and the birds refuse to sing and everyone is talking but no one hears a thing. If the messenger is angry and the birds refuse to sing and everyone is talking, but no one hears a thing. If the messenger is angry, and the birds refuse to sing, and everyone is talking, but no one hears a thing.
Pretty impressive what you can get out of just one DSP-based plugin like that. Taking a vocal where you can just take it dry and it sounds pretty good and then pump it up and widen it, and then suddenly it's got reverb and a delay on it and just sounds so much bigger. These are all over the top a little bit more than what you might do in an actual mix, but it's to give you an idea of the power of what you can do with an audio plugin like this. So one more demo and then we'll get back to our interview. I couldn't get away without at least playing something for one of the demos, so this is from the same song, Listen to Your Heart. It's a guitar solo that I played using an acoustic guitar with a piezo pickup. It's kind of thin sounding and not too fat, but what we're going to do is let you hear it dry, and then I'm going to run it through the Tony Maserati reamplification plugin that allows you to take the guitar and actually widen it out, add a little bit of a choral and reverb effect, and then for the second half of that, I'm going to actually run it through sounding like an electric guitar. Same guitar, acoustic, now sounding fat and big like a big monster metal guitar. So check this out, and we'll get back to our interview. So there you have basically an idea of what you can do with DSP-based audio plugins. You can insert them into your tracks and just create all kinds of new sounds with the existing instruments you have. Turn that acoustic guitar into a rock guitar, take that vocal and put it into outer space, or do real subtle and wonderful, beautiful mixes. Pretty cool stuff, all kinds of plugins out there. But let's get back to our interview with folks from Waves and see what more we have to learn there. So one of the other things comes up about plugins and that technology, it's always been kind of a sticking point for some, the formats. Essentially, it started out on Sound Designer with the DigiDesign API, this plugin format, which was sort of a spin-off of what Apple was doing with their drop-in plugin format that I talked about at the top of the show. And then Time Division Multiplexing, or TDM. A lot of people say, well, TDM sounds better than native. Though these days you're starting to hear more people using native plugins and feeling like they don't even need the hardware. What's Waves' take on this, and is there still development going on for hardware-based, or is it just all going native?
Okay, I'll try to take them one by one. Basically, you know, one of the mottos that Gilad and Meir have is let's try to support as many platforms are out there that are legitimate working platforms. And I think we're one of the companies that has the broadest support. So both for platforms and for versions, you know, we support everything from, you know, PCs and Macs, of course, to PowerPCs and Intels. And when a new host comes out that looks interesting, we always look at supporting that as well. We have people that at this point are invested in terms of their training in Waves as much as they are in the host that Waves plugs into. So we want them to be able to transfer their knowledge of the plugins from one platform to another. So we support a pretty broad variety of hosts and platforms. In terms of TDM versus native, you know, TDM was really what allowed Waves to exist in the early days. I think it was 93 or 94 when DigiDesign opened their API, like you mentioned, to allow third-party plugin developers. That's what allowed Wave to ride the wave, no pun intended, you know, of this digital revolution. Pro Tools became, you could say, the standard to an extent, you know, in some places, and Waves was right there with them and became the standard as the third-party plugin developer. It's true that more and more people are working natively because at this point, processors are fast enough and affordable enough where you don't need to work TDM. There are some advantages to working with Pro Tools TDM today still, but who knows, you know, what the future holds. It looks like definitely more and more things are going in the native direction. So whatever will be there as the host platforms that people use, we're going to support. I think that's the key.
Gotcha. Now, another aspect of Waves that I've been following for a while that I want you to let listeners know about, because, like, again, there's people out there that are really know what Waves is all about, and there's people that are hearing about this for the first time kind of scratching their head going, huh, how do I find out about this? Obviously, they can go to waves.com, but you have these things called webinars, you do videos, you have the artist presets, and various levels of bundles. The videos and the artist presets give people a way right off the cuff to start that have never played with any of this and get a sense of what's going on, as well as the webinars give you a way to kind of check into some of these places in hotbeds like New York or Los Angeles or wherever it might be to actually see these clinics in action. But tell the listeners a little bit about all of this and how this works for them and how it makes it easier to learn what's going on with Waves.
Sure. You know, we want to give people a way to learn about Waves, even if they're not very familiar with what digital signal processing is, even if they're not mixing engineers yet. So we have a division called sound.org, and we make books, and those books allow people to learn from professionals on how to mix a song, how to produce a song. We started with that, and then we went on to do these clinics. These, like you mentioned, clinics in New York and Los Angeles. You know, we do clinics in several of our dealer locations that allow people to come and ask questions, and we demonstrate things to them. Sometimes we'll come down with one of these engineers that we work with. Then we started doing presets. So then, you know, once you have presets, you can really look and say, okay, well, this professional mixing engineer that I really admire, you know, Eddie Kramer, what does he do to a snare? And you look at exactly how he EQs it and how he compresses it. So that's been informative as well. Last is these webinars that you mentioned are basically taking these clinics worldwide, because we can't be everywhere, but we said, you know, people really like these events. We don't even call them clinics. We call them events because they tend to be kind of fun. And put them online so people can see a video and they can ask questions. You know, somebody could be sitting in a remote village in Austria and asking me a question when I do a clinic or webinar or when another one of our artists does a webinar. On top of that, we also have an educational program. We've got the Waves Certification Program and the Waves Gold Certification Program. That's for audio engineering students who really want to delve deep, who don't want the quick way to mix, which would be like the artist signature, but rather they want to really know every nook and cranny of how to work the Q10 so that then they can walk into a studio and say, hey, I know how to work Waves top to bottom. I'm very familiar. I work fast. And they can take any one of these courses, the certification program or the gold certification program, at one of many audio schools. We try to do a lot to bring the information to our users. And of course, like you mentioned, you can download a demo of any Waves plugin and try it free of charge and see if you like it.
Yeah, the demos seem like a great place for people to start, not sure if it's going to run on their PC or their Mac, or does it support my operating system, and that, where you can just go and grab a demo, try it out for, what is it, 10 days, 2 weeks?
It's about 10 days. You can download and try any one of our plugins and see if it works for you. And, of course, we have tech support. We've got a great group of guys that will pick up the phone and they'll walk you through any question you have, any issue you have.
We mentioned VocalWriter a few times, this unique plugin. What is VocalWriter and how does that work?
VocalWriter is a plugin that works inside Pro Tools, Logic, Cubase, whatever DAW you're using, and essentially levels the vocals. But it doesn't do it in the traditional way that we're used to with a compressor. And the reason we wanted to take a different approach is because a compressor changes the sound. It imparts a certain character on the sound, which is why some people use a compressor, you know, as a creative tool to color the sound. But what often engineers do is they'll get the color they want out of a vocal track, but then they'll go into the automation within their host, and using the rubber band, they'll just draw the vocal levels, right? So they'll raise it up in certain parts to make sure it stays just above the playback, or they'll lower it in certain parts if it's too loud. They either do that by riding a fader with their finger or by drawing on the rubber band in their host. VocalWriter takes that part of the mixing process, which isn't really a fun one, it's one that people just have to do, and it automates it. So you drop VocalWriter on your track, your vocal track that is, and it will level your vocal without coloring it, and it reacts to the playback. So if, you know, there's a chorus and guitars come in and, you know, a certain keyboard comes in, then Vocal Writer can recognize that and raise your vocal just enough so that the vocal stays on top of the music. So no longer do professional mixing engineers who prefer to consider themselves painters or artists have to sit there and ride these faders, which, like I said, is a pretty menial task. Now Vocal Writer does it for you.
Pretty useful technology, most definitely. So one of the other subjects comes up that's a little bit more of a sore subject for some of folks like Waves and other companies that are making this kind of technology. It doesn't matter whether it's audio or visual or whatever, is software piracy. Now, there's a company out there that I think has some affiliation to Waves, or maybe it's just I see it listed on the Waves website when I went there, but it's called Band Piracy. What's that all about?
Yeah, band piracy was an initiative a few years ago that, in association with Waves, it was an initiative to try to crack down, no pun intended, on people using cracks. And the reason is because it became very common, very prevalent for people to be using pirated software in the audio world. You know, we're a company that we make software, that's what we make, and people were just feeling that it's okay to use pirated software, even commercial facilities. And it got to a point where Waves, together with some other people, said that that just isn't right. People need to understand that if they use pirated software, you know, there could be consequences. So that's what that initiative was. It was an initiative to try to let people know that, using pirated software is not okay and that there could be consequences if you're using software that you didn't buy legally.
So has it helped at all? Or what is your take on it so far over the last couple of years now that it's been happening?
I would say that it has helped. You know, I think in talking to people now, it gave people a second to pause and to say, wait a minute, yeah, this is, you know, I wouldn't walk into a store and just take a compressor and walk out the door. I shouldn't be doing the same thing with a software compressor either. You know, if somebody worked hard to build it. The truth is we got a lot of emails from people who buy and bought our software and told us they were happy about band piracy because they were really upset that they spent money on software because they wanted to use it legally and they wanted to pay for tools that they were using. But they had competitors that weren't paying for it, and that gave them an edge that wasn't fair.
Can you give us a little teaser of what's in the future, the crystal ball for Waves? What can we expect to see coming? Any new giant advancements? Are you going to do a Michael Jackson plug-in, or what's coming up for vocals?
Yeah,
or what?
I mean, you know, of course I can't talk specifically about things that we're working on, but, you know, I would say that there's a couple of cool things coming up, you know, some plug-ins that people have wanted us to put out for a long time that we're working on now and that will be out soon. We've got some really cool Artist Signature series collections that are coming out. We're working more on the innovative type time saver tools like Vocal Writer, the more hybrid stuff, you know, that people are really excited about our hybrid EQ and hybrid delay, so we're working on those. And of course, we've got two divisions that we didn't mention yet. One is the consumer division. You know, Waves at this point, we use our signal processing not only within the music world, but also in the world of laptops, televisions, anything that has audio integrated there, our DSP can often work to improve that audio. So, for example, people these days have large screen televisions, but they have small speakers, right? Because the manufacturers often skimp on the speakers. And so we have psychoacoustic technology called Max that tricks the mind, actually, into thinking that it's hearing sound that's bigger than it really is. We use all kinds of technology to improve the sound of laptops and of telephones and of televisions. So that's our consumer division. The other thing we're working on these days are tools for the live industry. So you've got front of house engineers, you've got monitor mixers that are mixing every day live, you know, shows, stadiums, small clubs, whatever the venue might be. But many of them are still using traditional mixing consoles, analog consoles. Some of them moved on to digital consoles like DigiDesign's Venue System, digital Yamaha or Midas or Digico console. Well, what we're doing now is to integrate our plugins that people are so used to using in the studios into these consoles. So we're giving people more and more ways to take the plugins they know from the studio on the road with them.
So a little bit different than what we've been talking about. You're based in Israel. I'm up here in Nevada City, California. We're talking over Skype, actually, for anybody out there in the tech world who's wondering. But it's also just a few days before kind of a big celebration that's going on over in Israel. What's that all about, too? I think our listeners might find that kind of fun to hear about.
Well, we have Independence Day. So it's sort of the equivalent of the American 4th of July. Yeah, it's a fun little holiday here. Israel is one of those countries that every year that goes by and we're still here and celebrate another birthday, it's not something you take for granted. So it's a big celebration.
Well, I think that's a good lesson for everybody on the planet to remember. Well, Shahar, it's been an interesting interview, most definitely. I'm sure there'll be another one down the road. Any last words you have to share with our listeners?
Well, the main thing I wanted to say is just thanks to you, Mikhail, for taking the time to talk to me and inquire about waves. We're really happy when people out there are interested, and, you know, especially you, you're one of the godfathers in this industry. I know you have a pretty extensive background in digital audio workstations and audio in general, so it's been really great. Thanks so much for taking the time to call me up.
Well, my pleasure to talk to you, Shahar.
Well, there you have it.
An interesting little interview with some friends of mine. A lot of great, great tools out there, and Waves in particular, they've got the largest catalog, but they've been around for a long time, and they have a really wide range of support. I've put a lot of links up on the Zentech site, which you can find at zen.kvmr.org. It's real simple. Just go to zen.kvmr.org and click on today's show. You'll see it there. My name's attached to it as well. All kinds of links where you can find out how to get in touch with Waves, some of the artists that we mentioned, like Eddie Kramer, Tony Maserati, Chris Lord-Alge. They're doing a signature series, as we mentioned during the interview. There's some really useful YouTube demos and tutorials as well that you can find out on all this kind of stuff. But in Waves in particular, just go to the youtube.com/user/DanielWaves. Just search for Waves on YouTube and you'll find all kinds of information there. Sounds.org, where you can find out more about their books and CDs and useful tips and that sort of thing. There's just a wealth of information available at your fingertips. And as we mentioned, a lot of these plugins, almost everything out there, have downloadable demos that you can easily just, you know, try out for free on your PC or your Mac. You need to have a fairly good machine in order to use this kind of technology, but it's really fun, and even for just a beginner who's just starting out, just download some of the demos, see what works for you. Plug your guitar into it, start laying down some tracks, use GarageBand, you can use Logic, you can work with Ableton Live. Any of these programs support a wonderful array of plugins, and Waves just one of the companies out there making a whole lot of them. I should mention the fact that I've been using Waves since they started almost 20 years ago, and I still have my original Q10 floppy disk. And I should mention as well some of the audio examples that I created for today's show. I'd like to say thanks to Paul Kamm and Eleanor McDonald for letting me use some of the raw tracks that we had from an album that we did a few years back. And the demos that I put together, the audio examples, some of them were using demo versions of the Waves plugins there, which I downloaded myself to try out because I don't actually happen to own them either at this point in time. It was that easy to do. Real simple, so you can try it as well. So, thanks for listening today and supporting KVMR-FM, Nevada City.